Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with host mother-daughter team Dr. Gloria Call Horsley, marriage and family therapist, and Dr. Heidi Horsley, both experts in the area of grief and loss. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi dedicate this show to their deceased son and sibling, Scott, and to all of the parents and other family members who have lost loved ones before their time. Each week, Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and their guests will share stories of loss, hope, and renewal.
Hello, I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
Each week we welcome you to Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and conversation with those who suffered the loss of a loved one and for healthcare professionals who work in this most difficult field. And always the message is, others have been there before you and made it. So can you. You do not walk alone. These shows, this is a pre-recorded show, so you won't be able to call in today. Our shows are all archived on theblogmill.com, starting with theblogmill.com, as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. And all the shows can be downloaded on iTunes, and we have the transcripts on our website, thegriefblog.com. So if you don't have speakers on your computer, or if you have someone who has a hearing problem, or if you just like to read along, please download those. So, Heidi, did you have any thoughts about the blog or anything today? The blog's coming along, and I want to tell you that we put things on the blog and then articles and things, and then if you scroll down to the bottom, you'll see where there's a place for comments. So get in there and comment. Send us your poems, your recipes. Have you got any other thoughts about it, Heidi?
Just that I wanted to comment on the article that was the interview that was done with you.
Okay.
Somebody interviewed you, and I thought it was very interesting to read, and I thought it was well done, and there was stuff about you that I learned.
Uh-huh.
About the way that you grieved and how you got through it and made it through, and I thought one of the most telling things, I thought one of the most interesting things, I think, for our listeners is the part where the interviewer interviewed you and talked to you about how you coped, and you said you were bound and determined not to get sick because you had three children that were surviving, and that you went out and jogged every day, and you felt very guilty about that because you felt that the world was probably looking at you and judging you and saying, how could she take care of herself and jog when her son has been killed? I don't understand that. And my heart really went out to you because I know that must have been very hard, and I really give you a lot of credit for still taking care of your health.
Well, thanks, Heidi, and I hope our listeners are out there doing it. I really fantasized those first few weeks that my neighbors had their noses pressed against the window and were watching me go by. So please take care of yourself. You know, we've said it before, you can actually die of grief, and we don't want you to do that. We want you to make that commitment to stay healthy. Well, Heidi, I think that we've got a guest on today that will probably fit into that because we've got a person, Eric Hipple, and if you'll introduce him, he's a person who's been an athletic person all his life, and I'm sure he can have log in on some thoughts about men taking care of their health, too.
Absolutely. I was just thinking about that. Okay, our topic today is Real Men Do Cry, and our guest is Eric Hipple. Eric Hipple was quarterback for the Detroit Lions from 1980 to 1989 when he lost his and he lost his 15-year-old son, Jeff, to a self-inflicted gunshot wound in 2000. On the show, Eric shares with us how his professional life and his training as a supreme athlete have both helped him and hindered him in dealing with the death of his son. Eric has gone on to help others recognize risk for suicide and to deal with the aftermath of the event. Eric serves on the National Advisory Board of the University of Michigan's Depression Center, and has become a presenter on depression and suicide prevention at middle schools, high schools, and colleges throughout Michigan. Eric has always been an inspiration to others, both on and off the playing field. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Heidi. Thank you, Gloria.
Thanks. It's great to have you on. Before we get started, could you tell us a little bit about Jeff and about your journey?
Yeah. You know, as I look back, of course, now you know, most of the thoughts I have are all good thoughts and very positive thoughts. In fact, I was going through another project that I ever asked to come up with some B-roll, where so I was going through like 4.5 hours of worth of tape of old home movies over the weekend, and and just watching you know the kids grow up and stuff and seeing. You know, there's still a little tug of the heartstrings that, you know, that didn't get to me on, but going back and watching, you know, the funness of him enjoying him, you know, when he was younger. And then, and then, of course, of the flash to when he was older and started having the difficulty, and then that's where kind of the warm spark, you know, it's kind of still a little bit, still painful, and I think it always will be, you know, but the good certainly outweighs the that tinge of the heart a little bit, you know, when you think that his life no longer will go forward.
Yeah, only 15 years. How many children do you have?
I have four total, and the rest are girls. He was my only son.
Yeah, the same with us.
Yeah.
Where did he fit in the family?
He fit second to the oldest, so he's number two.
Your second son.
Yeah.
Well, Eric, now could you tell us a little bit about? He was four when you quit playing ball, right?
Yeah. And so you know, he doesn't remember much about me playing except for the fact that. From 1995 to 2000, I was working with Fox Pregame Show. So, you know, that's, you know, if you know, from his ages from what, 11 to 15. So he was involved in that side of it. So he could still see the, you know, the involvement in the football and everything else that was going on. And so he got, you know, some of that stuff where you got to go in the studios and see the stuff that's happening. And so
I would imagine he loved that. That would be a boy's dream, wouldn't it, to have a father that was doing that?
I don't know how he was great at basketball. That basketball was his sport, not football, which was interesting. He was better built for basketball, loved basketball, and so he was more of the basketball player than, in fact, he was, you know, captain of his freshman basketball team.
Right.
So
very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about. Did you have some idea that he was feeling depressed or?
Well, that's one thing that's real difficult looking back on, and I used to beat myself up really bad about it because I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, I compare this like this way, if you'll give me the time to explain it. But you can only, you know, this is how I dealt with the guilt. You can only deal with the information that you have at the time.
Right.
And it's like blaming a surgeon back in the Civil War days where, you know, when they used to amputate legs and not wash their hands and go to another person. Most, you know, had more people die from the operations from bacteria and infection than they did actual from the gunshot wounds. You know, so you would look at that nowadays and say, how could somebody operate and not wash their hands? I mean, what were they thinking? But you know what? That's all the information they had.
Well, and it's like,
and so you look back, and I look back on when Jeff was experiencing his symptoms of what he was going through. You know, I only had the information I had to deal with and going through with that. And so, yeah, took him to the general practitioner several times, and because he had like aches and didn't feel well, but that's the only way he could explain it. It was he didn't feel good, he didn't feel well, and
now did he take his life with a gunshot? Then
yes, he did. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Do you have? I know some of the guys who hunt, or some people who are policemen that I've talked to, whose kids have taken their life with their guns, feel very guilty about that.
Yeah, that's part of it, but you know, in the same token, he was well versed in how to use a gun because we would go skeet shooting, and so he'd gone through gun management. In other words, they're trained on how to use them,
and
so he had his certificate and stuff like that. So
you'd say to those guys out there, look, what?
Yeah,
whose kids have shot themselves. What would you say to them?
I would say, first of all, protect the gun very well. I mean, and even at the best protection,
yeah, they all feel
great.
That way. Protection.
I think the stats run that if those that die by a gunshot wound, if it's 90% of the guns are already inside the house, only 10% of the people actually have gone out and bought a gun, you know, to take their life.
Yeah.
It's like 90% of them are done. And a lot of times, you know, you've got that impulsivity phase that, you know, that's in the immediate, that a gun, there's no going back after a gunshot wound. You know,
right.
If somebody overdoses or something like that, or, you know, you
so,
got
so
some time, you got a time
can be
frame
impulsive.
There.
Teenagers are impulsive, and they can do impulsive things.
Yeah.
In the spur of the moment. Was there something in his life, like a breakup, or that you think triggered this, or was it just a lot of things?
I think it was a overall degradation over a period of time, because the previous year, around springtime, he'd start feeling not well and start not wanting to go to school. And then the year that he died, same thing happened to him, except it was a little more severe. You know, and it seemed like it's just going through blues or something like that that's happening to him. But it was around springtime. And one thing that, you know, that's a lot of people don't realize is that one of the highest suicide rates is, you know, the first week of May.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is, well, that's weird because it's springtime.
You think
there's like a, you're right. I mean, if it's the wintertime and spring is okay, but I don't know why it is, but
well, isn't it because people are feeling better and they feeling like they have the energy to do it now?
That could be.
Or maybe life should be better. Well, yeah. Tell us, you've talked a little bit about the taboos connected around suicide. Can you talk a little bit about that for our audience?
The taboos that surround it, the
some of suicide, whether people talk about it or not.
Well, yeah, one of the myths that you don't talk about it because you're afraid to put it in somebody's mind is certainly a myth. The fact is usually that if you are able, you know, to come to an understanding that is what the person's thinking about, that there actually is a trust that's built up and they understand and the anxiety is lessened. They're more apt to get to seek help and to look for support.
Okay, but how about people talking to you about it after Jeff took his own life? Were people willing to talk to you about it?
That was one of the most difficult things because it is a hush-hush deal. Mm-hmm. If there's an accident, for example, when somebody loses their life either through, say, it's any type of loss is tragic when it's sudden. I don't care what kind of it is. You know, the only difference is if you're at the viewing or the funeral, and people come up and say, "So what happened?"
Mm-hmm.
And that as somebody who lost their son or daughter to a tragic traffic accident, for example, will say, "Oh, they lost control of the car." You know, they'll describe it.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people come up and say, "So what happened?"
Mm-hmm.
In fact, people don't know what to say. And the best thing that anybody can say is just give their condolences and in a hug or a deal like that, because I think that quiet understanding, I'm here for you, you know, whatever you need to know. You know, I think that's great. But a lot of times people are afraid to even associate with it because they don't understand it.
How did you feel about people who said, "How did he die?" And then you said he with a gunshot wound, and then they said, "Well, tell me about it." Did anybody do that? How would you have felt?
Those that are immediately associated that I knew personally knew how he died. Those that that read about it or came or, you know, afterwards that didn't know exactly the circumstance behind it, I felt compelled to explain to them, you know, this is what was going on in his life. I tried to, you know, explain to them that, you know, this is what was going on, you know, and this is a serious thing. You know, for the last 3-4 weeks, he was complaining of, you know, headaches and stomach aches, not feeling well, his grades had dropped. And, you know, so I found myself explaining the symptoms of depression to him, you know, over and over again,
mm-hmm.
You know, as a prelude to the thought. So they would understand that it wasn't something just an impulsive act that was done. I mean, this was a plan that was enacted out.
So you felt the need to educate people, which I love that you felt that need, and let people know this is depression and this is what it looks like and these are... Somatic complaints are part of depression,
right? Especially in teenagers, and agitation, withdrawal, and all the stuff that went to sleep problems, and all the stuff that went along with it. And, you know, and like I said, if you can go back and paint that picture, then mm-hmm. it kind of is understood. You know,
You know what? One thing we talk about a little bit is that sometimes men don't talk about loss as much as women do. They tend to have more of a society. Did you feel that way, or because, you know, I'm wondering, because you were a football player, if there was some kind of a team mentality that you had anyway? You know, do you think you talk more than other guys did?
You know, I don't know, because at the early beginnings, I felt compelled to talk. You know, to try and explain. Like I said, because you want to. You still want to celebrate his life,
right.
And it's really hard to do when people aren't asking about his life because they're afraid because of the way he died. And so I kind of wanted to explain that away so people understood, no, this, you know, this is why this happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like somebody dying from an illness. This is what happened. You know, like if somebody dies from cancer, this is you know, they get sick first and they the prelude up to it.
But I do think you're unusual that, like my mom said, that you were willing and able and wanted to be so verbal and vocal, and I think it's so important. I mean, they just had something on Newsweek magazine this week. The cover is about men and depression and how they don't talk about it enough.
Well, yeah, on the fact
that... Yeah, you know, on that point, let's take a break on talking about men and depression. So we're coming up for break, and I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, and... Please stay tuned to hear more from Eric Hipple on Real Men Do Grieve. And you can access the archives of this show from our website, thegriefblog.com. Please stay tuned for more.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Hello, this is Dr. Gloria Horsley, host of Healing the Grieving Heart. Many of you have asked Heidi and me about our forthcoming book for parents on helping teens deal with loss. We are pleased to announce that the book will be published by Rainbow Books and will be available in your bookstores spring of 07. Visit our website for the quote of the week, as well as information on our next book, Keeping Your Marriage Strong After a Profound Loss.
The challenges we face day to day create physical, intellectual, spiritual, and emotional tensions, which affect the way we feel. Our body sends us signals, pain, stress, worry, that originate in how we think, feel, or behave. We're All a Little Crazy host, clinical social worker, and therapist, Debbie Benching, and her expert guests look at the various influences that mold professional and public views of mental health, treatments, and methods to achieve emotional well-being. Learn to manage difficult circumstances in life and relationships with integrity and confidence. Express emotion more clearly and gain depth in choices that lead to mental and physical health in your relationship and your life. Tune into We're All a Little Crazy with Debbie Benching, broadcasting each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We're All a Little Crazy. Clarity, healing, and change through personal growth. Omega Institute is the country's leading center for holistic studies. Now you can experience selected workshops from Omega in the comfort of your own home. Join us for a live web broadcast with John Friend, the founder of Anasara Yoga. In this dynamic workshop, we learn the Hatha Yoga system that is a celebration of the heart and looks for the good in all people and all things. To find out more about our live web broadcast, log on to our website, www.eomega.org. That's www.eomega.org. Or call us at 800-944-1001. That's 800-944-1001.
Do you want to live a more productive life in spite of your pain? Pain is something that has happened to you. This is not who you are. Tune in to Pain Tamers. Time to control your pain. Become your own best advocate. Become informed, equipped, and empowered to fight chronic pain together with Pain Tamers. Time to control your pain. With host Helen Dierman. Every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Voice America Health and Wellness. Your life, your health, your network.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffer the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your co-host, Dr. Heidi, with my mom and host, Dr. Gloria. For those of you just joining us today, our topic is Real Men Do Cry, and our guest is Eric Hipple. Eric was quarterback for the Detroit Lions from 1980 to 1989. He lost his 15-year-old son, Jeff, to a self-inflicted gunshot wound in 2000. Eric serves on the National Advisory Board of the University of Michigan's Depression Center and has become a presenter on depression and suicide prevention at middle schools, high schools, and colleges throughout Michigan. Eric has always been an inspiration to others, both on and off the playing field. Welcome back to the show, Eric and Gloria.
Thanks, Hyde.
Thank you.
When we went to break, we were talking a little bit about the magazine article on men and depression, and this show is pre-recorded, so I think that you'll have to look at, where is it from, Newsweek, Heidi?
Eric, have you seen it?
Yeah, it was in Newsweek, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, well, you'll have to look at does Newsweek come out monthly or weekly? I don't know. But anyway, our show will be on, and you might have to look back a couple of weeks to get the right Newsweek. But anyway, so I wanted to ask you one thing about men and depression, but also, Eric, now, were you married to Jeff's mom at the time?
No, I was not. In fact, I had been remarried for 14 years at the time.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that for our audience out there, for the guys who are remarried. Were there any issues that came in around that? And did Jeff live with you or with his mom?
Actually, and that's one of the things that's, when you talk about depression, that's one of the issues that's really, you know, that I, one thing I did not know about was, you know, the stress factor that's, you know, that enacts on the, you know, on the biological side of, you know, somebody who might be predisposed to depression, which it runs in my family and also happens to run in my ex-wife's family. But, no, we were divorced back in 90. And so he lived with his mom in Utah. And then, but would come out. So he was with me for a year, then went back with her for a year, then came back out with me for a year. And it's really funny, it's strange, is the fact that we had a great relationship and still do. And
you mean with your ex-wife?
With my ex-wife, yeah. And so there was never any fighting or anything about the over. In fact, my daughter explained it. My oldest daughter explained it to, because both Jeff and her were from Jan. They explained it this way. They said, no matter what we did, we were homesick because when we lived with you, we loved living with you. When we missed mom. When we lived with mom, we loved living with her, but we missed you. And so, this idea of having this great, you know, compatibility and, you know, it's still very disruptive, you know, for kids.
Mm-hmm. And what about guilt connected with that? Do you, for the guys out there that are having this, did you feel some of that?
Certainly, yeah. And, I do. And, there's no getting around it. You know, that'll always be a little bit there because, you know, in his growing up, you know, I think what was he, you know, when we divorced, he was at a young age.
Probably like one, right?
He's three, I think.
Three, uh-huh.
Yeah. And so, you know, the summers, he would spend all the summer times with me and then, you know, go back out and then all the Christmas time, summertime. So, I mean, we never had an issue with, you know, bad-mouthing each other or anything else. They were never in a tug-of-war. And so that was... I mean, that was, you'd think that that'd be the best situation that you could ever have.
And the thing about it is, Eric, and you did bring up the point that genetics plays a big role in this, and the reality is 50% of all marriages end in divorce and 50% of all teens are not killing themselves.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it's easy for people to be armchair quarterbacks, and I know you like that term because you were a quarterback, and say, well, you could have, should have, would have done this and this and that, but the reality is... You did what you thought you were doing, and you raised them in a good home with two loving parents in two different houses, and this happened.
Right. And I think that's one thing that people don't understand is the fact that, you know, these major stress issues, you know, they can act on the genetic predisposition. And that's one thing that we know about depression, is the fact that, you know, stress factors is what kind of stimulates it. And one of the major onsets of depression is age 15 to 19. And so,
yeah, but what about you, Eric, for our audience out there? You said you've got some depression in your family. How did you deal with that after Jeff died?
Actually, that's what got me in the mode that I'm in right now, was to go back and finally get some education, understand what's going on. I finally asked my mother what was wrong with my Aunt Joanne when she was... I found out, you know, at age 16, my Aunt Joanne was institutionalized with schizophrenia at the time. We knew something was wrong, but nobody ever talked about it at all.
So you went back and did some family talking.
Yeah. Well, I went back and tried to recreate what would happen to me and some of the feelings I had. And when I found out about what depression was and started looking at all the things, I went back in my own history and said, oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could paint, you know, the crying spells at nighttime having trouble sleeping, some of the procrastination stuff until it got to a crisis moment, and then you handle it then. You know, all those things that, you know, a lot of those mood feelings that I had that I realized, oh, my gosh, you know, it runs in our family.
Now, how did you take care of yourself? Oh,
yeah,
I'm sorry, honey.
Say, you had some of the same things as Jeff, it sounded like.
Yeah, and that's when one of the problems is, you know, if you've had it and you've gone through and you've lived with it, it's harder to recognize unless you've already discovered it and have gotten treatment for it, then you can recognize it. Otherwise, you're saying, well, I was like that when I was young, you know, so...
That's normal.
Yeah.
You might think it's normal if you've been, you know.
Well, Eric, one of the things I'm interested in that we're hearing here is some of the things like sleep problems and those kind of problems are normal grieving. So do you have any thoughts on how, if a guy has had a child die, how they might know if it's normal or not, or what did you do? Did you have any thoughts for them?
Well, I'd say, first of all, that anybody that does have a death, especially a quick, tragic one, any death is bad enough, but a quick, tragic one is it slams and just halts everything that, you know, There's no time to prepare for anything else, and all of a sudden that just takes over. And then trying to deal with normal functioning in that grief process is very difficult. And in fact, a clinician won't even try and do a diagnosis with somebody who's grieving without, you know, for the first year.
Some of them won't.
Yeah, well, that's true.
A good one.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, hopefully they won't.
Yeah, hopefully. Because there's a lot of the things that go along with the down feelings and the sleep and the crying spell and all that stuff and agitation and not feeling it, and I'm feeling out of sorts. All those are part of grieving.
And they're part of a guy's grieving.
Angry. Yeah, and how about being angry?
Angry is huge. And,
yeah, were you angry at Jeff?
No, that's one thing I never did. In fact, the moment I got the phone call, I in a weird way I understood it, and maybe it's because of what I was dealing with. And then when I got angry was when I found out. I became very destructive, and I really didn't care about much about living or myself, and went through that process for a while.
Talk about that a little bit more. What kind of things did you do?
Well, you know, impulsive things, like, you know, like when my driving, I didn't care, you know, how I acted. I started self-medicating pretty heavily and just, you know, kind of put things
aside. Were you drinking or drugs?
Yeah, yeah. Well, about anything else to get my mind somewhere else. And,
right.
But I ended up getting pulled over for a DUI. And then with that, the programs I had available to go to and everything else, you know, to stay out of trouble, and I didn't care. You know, I didn't go to them. I didn't, you know, I just, so about every chance the judge gave me, you know, I didn't really care. And so I ended up doing 58 days in jail.
Wow.
And that 58 days was spent a lot of time sleeping and thinking and reading. So between those three things, you know, I think about halfway through I decided, well, I can leave this and do what I'm doing, or I can take my life, or I can fix and find out what's going on. And that was the third choice I decided to take was, you know, let me research this, let me understand it, let me get my hands around it.
What kind of stuff were you reading?
About actually anything I could get my hands on just to get my mind away from anything, and I would end up trying to read, I'd read and myself asleep, and it's including the Bible, it's including, you know, Newsweek, Time, anything else, any book, any novel, and anything else that was there, trying to get my mind away from everything else that was there, just trying to focus on something else than my thoughts, and found out you can't run away from your thoughts, you know.
Was religion helpful for you?
I've always been pretty religious in my life, and so it was helpful. Trying to get redirected was helpful. I think everybody has to have some sort of a purpose in life, and I kind of had lost mine. I have a family left over that I could either walk away from or pull things together and survive it.
So it was in jail that you decided, look, I'm going to pull myself together and try to figure out what's going on with me.
Yeah. Yep. And when I did come out,
I want to ask you one thing. Did you have any counseling while you were in jail?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Was that helpful?
But I had counseling beforehand, too. One of the greatest things that I did that really helped me that I refocused back in on was some of the grief counseling that I received right after Jeff died. And So
you went back to it even though it didn't help you. At the time, you did this wild behavior and all that, even though you had the information.
I went through, like, the phase I first went through was, okay, dealing with getting along on a daily basis. And that means being able to function during the daytime in a somewhat normal fashion and learning there's a time to grieve. And I did so with the use of a tool, like a candle that used to set up and light in the evening time, and that would be the time that I'd grieve. And so
I love that.
Try and displace the grieving time so I know I'd have that time to do it so I could function during the daytime. Otherwise,
you set limits on your grief, which is great.
Yeah, otherwise, every little trigger that hits you, you find yourself crying in the middle of the day, you know, whatever you're doing, all of a sudden just tears start flowing. You know, it's just, you know, every little thing that hits you and your life has kind of come to an end. And so you have to refocus and get that energy back and know when you can grieve. And so it was a process that I kind of let get away from me. And then so I went back to that.
Did any of your training as a professional athlete help you with your grief process?
Yeah, I don't The only thing I think that really helped me out more than anything from my athletic career was the fact of getting knocked down and getting back up again.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
The next play is going to come at you no matter what, so get back up. You know?
What about expecting the team to help you? I mean, the support team, could you pull that in at all?
The fact that, metaphorical sort of speaking terms that, yes, you know, you're not going to be successful unless you bring people together, okay, and understand that you need a team to work with because you can't do this alone. You can't do it alone on the field, and you can't do it alone by yourself in the arena that you're certainly in life. You know, you need people around. And so, yes, that was a part of it. And I just, sometimes you forget that you have a team, and you know, and you're off and trying to do things by yourself.
Do you think that there's any feeling that maybe you want to punish yourself a bit too? You know, like your behaviors, but also rejecting other people or not letting them help or not letting them in. Was there any of that for you?
I don't know that that other than the fact that I was just very angry at the fact that this knowledge was out there that I didn't know about,
mm-hmm.
that nobody had talked, you know, about, and, you know, the fact that we might have been able to save Jeff, you know, if I would have known this stuff before.
And the fact that maybe if you brought him to doctors and somebody had said when they were examining him, you know what, this is a serious depression, we need to get some serious help here.
True, but I realize this, that if you don't know what to say to a doctor,
mm-hmm.
there's very difficult for them to be able to, in their short period of time, then able to diagnose you.
Okay.
So I use that to a degree of trying to explain symptoms, the reason why we need to use you know, you need to learn as much as you can, so when you go in front of a professional, you need to say, these are the things that are happening to me, just like you would if, you know, if you had a strep throat, for example. Okay, my throat hurts really bad, so they know where to look. So if I go and I said, I'm not eating well, I'm not sleeping well, I know I'm anxious all the time, you know, I can't concentrate, and you start listing these things, they'll say, aha, they'll know where to direct you. But if you just go in and say, I don't feel good, what are they supposed to do, you know? And so I don't blame the doctors for Jeff's case.
Mm-hmm.
I blame it more on the lack of education from not knowing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, go back to the Civil War doctors, and they don't blame themselves, obviously. I'm sure if they're living nowadays, they'd say, oh, my gosh, so many people I killed.
Well, and it's people like you and you going out and doing outreach and educating the world that'll hopefully prevent somebody else, some other child, from taking their life.
Yeah. And that's the hope, and that's the goal, and that's what I'm doing. What I'm doing.
And that also gives you purpose, doesn't it, for Jeff's life?
Yes, it does. And I think, you know, sometimes in the bigger scheme of things, maybe that's what had to be done, not only to save other lives, but maybe to save mine as well. And so I kind of look at it that way. But you know, it doesn't get past the point. The fact that, you know, you lose somebody. In fact, you know, we're talking about this grieving process, it really hit home about a week ago. I had it was on the radio, we had our county commissioner, Oakland County commissioner, had his son was killed in a tragic accident, snowmobiling accident. And so that came back to hit home because, you know, there's a friend of mine that's going through something that I went through, and just monitoring what's going on in his situation, the same thing, you know, he's daytime, and you know, tears will be coming, and trying to fight off. You got a huge job, responsible for all these people, and yet, how do you take care of yourself and do it? And I liked what I heard you guys talking about yourself, Gloria, when you're talking about yourself,
mm-hmm.
taking care of yourself. I love that because I think of the symbolism on an airplane when they pull down the mask and say, make sure you take care of yourself before you can take care of anybody else.
Ah, right. That's good.
And I love that symbolism because I think, you know, that's it. Mm-hmm. You can't take care of your family, you can't take care of anything unless you take care of yourself first. Once you're healthy and healing, then you can take care of everybody else. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And then you can take that burden on and make sure you're taking care of yourself as you're doing it. Otherwise, you don't do anybody any good. In fact, you can actually do more harm.
Right. Now, Eric, when you went to jail, how long had it been since Jeff had died?
It was, I'm trying to think of the actual time frame. I think it was within a year.
It was within that year. And then, because that's one of the points I want to make to guys. I mean, we don't expect you to have this amazing turnaround after you listen to the show, right? there, Eric is talking about how he had this information, but it really sunk in later on in the year, didn't it?
Yeah, I went through, I think, the initial grieving part to just to get to function, so I could function during the daytime and move around. But then that soon turned to, okay, now that I can function, but I still have all the stuff still inside. And so the self-medicating and not paying attention, not really caring was still there with me. And then I let that get away from me, you know.
Yeah, we're coming up on break now, and I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, and we're talking to Eric Kipple about Real Men Do Cry and about the death of his son, Jeff. And please stay tuned to hear more on this show and go to our website, thegriefblog.com, to put in your story and to leave us your comments. Please stay tuned.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
The incidence of autism has increased at an alarming rate. Autism One, A Conversation of Hope, hosted by Betsy Hicks, illuminates how right now there is more reason than ever for individuals with autism spectrum disorders and their families to have the best hope for the brightest future. Autism is treatable, and given appropriate therapies, children are recovering. With well-known researchers and doctors, members of Congress, and expert service providers from a wide range of disciplines, Betsy offers interviews and insights highlighting the progress in areas related to autism spectrum disorders, such as biomedical research and treatment, communication, education, and behavioral modalities, adult services, sociological and philosophical issues, and legislative advocacy and insurance concerns. Autism One, A Conversation of Hope, broadcasts each Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Autism One, A Conversation of Hope. Through education and conversation, there is hope. In the realm of mental health, psychiatry is often misunderstood. On Good Psychiatry is Good Medicine, with host and forensic psychiatrist Dr. Ron Kennedy Bailey, find out the truth behind the myths, rumors, disparities, and misconceptions about the broad spectrum of mental illness and treatment options. Dr. Bailey educates and informs with truthful, factual, honest, and direct communication of information regarding mental health issues and topics to further enhance the overall medical and legal areas in healthcare. For the best information on ADHD, psychopharmacology, forensic, and psychiatric health concerns, tune into Good Psychiatry is Good Medicine with Dr. Ron Kennedy Bailey every Thursday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Hi, this is Mark Victor Hansen. You know me for Chicken Soup of the Soul, the 1 Minute Millionaire, and Cracking the Millionaire Code. And what I want you to know is that if you want to have rip-roaringly good health, listen to Health Crusades by my friend John Farley.
Tune in to Health Crusades with John Farley every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffer the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your co-host, Dr. Heidi, with my mom and host, Dr. Gloria. For those of you just joining us today, our topic is Real Men Do Cry, and our guest is Eric Hipple. Eric was quarterback for the Detroit Lions from 1980 to 1989. He lost his 15-year-old son, Jeff, to a self-inflicted gunshot wound in 2000. Eric serves on the National Advisory Board of the University of Michigan's Depression Center and has become a presenter on depression and suicide prevention at middle schools, high schools, and colleges throughout Michigan. Eric has always been an inspiration to others, both on and off the playing field. Welcome back to the show, Eric and Gloria.
Thanks, Hi.
Thanks, Hi.
Well, Eric, I love the title we picked for this. I said to you, let's see, what should we call it, Real Men Don't Cry? And you said, no, Real Men Do Cry.
I love that, too.
And I thought that was excellent. I know we've got football fans out there that have watched you play from, what was it, 80?
80 to 89.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about being a real man, you know, what it means? Give us a picture of that, and then we'll talk about what happens when something happens to a real man. How is it out on the field and being a quarterback? You're telling everybody what to do.
Now that's a lot of pressure, isn't it?
It's pressure that's that you get immediate feedback, and that's sometimes a good thing and sometimes a bad thing. You know, if you're having a good day, it's a great thing, and I was talking to a 15 to 16 year old group of boys the other day, and one of them asked me, "So what's it like, to get booed?" I said, "Well, it depends. If that's during the game, or if they're booing you as they're being introduced onto the field."
Right, that's a good point.
There's two different things. One is, it's part of the game. Okay, but if you're getting booed while you're walking on the field, you feel a lot of pressure just to complete the first pass. You know, so
right. Anyway,
but. I think a lot of the stuff that, in athletics is, the macho behind it is the fact that, you're bulletproof. You have to have no fear. You can't be intimidated. So you got to take care of business at hand. And if you get knocked down, you got to get up again and keep fighting. And it's done in the time frame. So you know that you've got that 60 minutes worth of fighting time that you're fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can give it everything you've got in that 60 minutes. I think where that loses translation is when you approach that into real life, it's hard to have that intensity and maintain that through your whole lifespan. And so what happens is, you find yourself, it's not as intense. So
there's a lot of highs and rushes, I would think, that you get during those 60 minutes that you probably want to recreate off the playing field.
That's the other side of it that I was talking about. When somebody asked me what it's like to be Buddhist, well, what's it like when you get cheered? And I said, well, having 80,000 people, screaming your name is a really, really cool, neat thing to have happen. And it's kind of like an experience where you're just kind of along for the ride and everything's going wrong really, really well. They call that in the zone feeling. But, those are very impactful things that have happened to you, and it's almost impossible to recreate. I would say the most powerful feeling I've ever felt that could compare to any emotion like that was when Jeff died.
Mm-hmm.
That was an emotion that I couldn't control.
Right.
I still can't even put it into words, but.
Now, obviously, you had no problems showing your tears and being emotional, and I was wondering if there was ever any teammates, I know it was a few years later, but that visited you, and when you broke down, they couldn't deal with it because they felt that real men don't cry.
I think within the confines of dad, there are certainly some people that said, they don't understand the whole thing, and they don't. They may understand it at their own level, but didn't want to deal with it because they don't want to face it. And there's also the mentality that, toughen up,
suck it up, isn't that what they say?
Suck it up,
Scott was the quarterback on the football team in high school, and he always talked about sucking it up.
Suck it up, get over it, And but I think the ones that are really, the real true men, I should say, that I believe in, are the ones that did come to the aid, and were able to sit there with you, and put an arm around you, be able to cry with you, be able to understand it, be able to visit you and see how you're doing, and just let you, whatever emotion you have, let it out.
Mm-hmm.
And they helped you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the true man that does that. And there was many of them that came to my aid.
We had Bill Hancock on our show. I don't know if you know him. He wrote Writing with the Blue Moth, and he was in charge of the basketball March Madness.
Yeah.
And I was surprised when he talked, wow, the sports world, there are a lot of good guys there that are really able to go, were there for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know if it's the camaraderie thing that goes along with that or if it's you're in it together and so you can understand it, but I think certainly there are those guys, some of them that don't get it. Mm-hmm. But I think the majority of them that are actually compassionate and involved do understand. They understand the pain, they understand the sacrifice, and they also understand you can't do it by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, if we've got some men out there that feel fairly isolated, have you got any suggestions for them?
Look introspectively and actually look at and examine themselves and realize that they can't do things by themselves, and it's okay not to do things by themselves. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to reach out and say, I need some help. I need a friend. I need someone to walk me alongside of me as I go through this, somebody I can lean on when I need to. I think that's very important, and I think it's important for guys to understand it and not worry about how the world's going to perceive them, because down the line, I mean, not down the line, but all across history, those people that seem stoic and seem like they didn't have support and help, they all did, you know, and they all had support. All the great men have always had support somewhere along, like, were able to open up and reach out and absorb and pull in everything that they needed to and give out everything they had to.
So I want to say Eric Hipple, quarterback for the Detroit Lions, 1980 to 1989, is saying to you guys, reach out. Right?
Yeah.
Reach out.
Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid. So we're coming up on break now, and I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley. And this is our last break with Eric Hipple. And we're talking about Real Men Do Cry. And when we come back from break, Eric, I want to ask you if there's something that you'd like to leave with our audience before we close our show. These shows are archived on our website, thegriefblog.com, as well as the Compassionate Friends website. They can also be downloaded on iTunes. Please stay tuned for more.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Just a reminder to our listeners that you can own 10 of the very best Healing the Grieving Heart shows, available on CD. Our listeners tell us that they have used these shows to examine the many viewpoints of grief and to stimulate conversation on this difficult subject. Call toll-free 877-969-0010. That's 877-969-0010 to order a set, or visit the CompassionateFriends.org website and click on TCF Originals for the opportunity to purchase this specially priced set at only $60 for 10 CDs plus shipping and handling. Heidi and I have donated all the proceeds to the Compassionate Friends to help bereaved families following the death of a child.
Omega Institute is the country's leading center for holistic studies. Now you can experience selected workshops from Omega in the comfort of your own home. Join us for a live web broadcast with John Friend, the founder of Anasara Yoga. In this dynamic workshop, we learn the Hatha Yoga system that is a celebration of the heart and looks for the good in all people and all things. To find out more about our live web broadcast, log on to our website, www.eomega.org. That's www.eomega.org. Or call us at 800-944-1001. That's 800-944-1001. Dating should be less about matching superficial interests and more about being comfortable expressing your inner being. When you're living with a special health condition, dating becomes a difficult balance between complete honesty and fear of judgment. This emotionally vulnerable dance can end up a frustrating experience. There is an option. On Finding Love with a Special Condition, host Ricky Michael Durham and Dr. Sherry Meltz discuss various conditions from AIDS, HIV, cancer, obesity, deafness, diabetes, IBS, infertility, and impotence to allergies, herpes, disease and hepatitis and offer support, alternatives, and opportunities to develop friendships and relationships built on understanding and honesty. Finding Love with a Special Condition broadcasts each Tuesday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Finding Love with a Special Condition with Ricky Michael Durham and Dr. Sherry Meltz. Acceptance and love with understanding and honesty.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffer the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your co-host, Dr. Heidi, with my mom and host, Dr. Gloria. For those of you just joining us today, our topic is Real Men Do Cry, and our guest is Eric Hipple. Eric was quarterback for the Detroit Lions from 1980 to 1989. He lost his 15-year-old son, Jeff, to a self-inflicted gunshot wound in 2000. Eric serves on the National Advisory Board of the University of Michigan's Depression Center and has become a presenter on depression and suicide prevention at middle schools, high schools, and colleges throughout Michigan. Eric has always been an inspiration to others both on and off the playing field. Welcome back to the show, Eric and Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi.
Thank you, Heidi.
Well, Eric, one thing we haven't had too much of a chance to talk about is your family. I wanted to say, Jan, Jeff's mom, you're divorced from her, and you're married to?
I'm married to Shelley, and then I have Taylor, who's now 15, and Tara, who's now 13.
Okay, and then you have an older daughter.
Erica.
Erica. And is it Erica that wrote the poem?
No, actually it's my youngest.
Oh, your youngest daughter wrote you a poem. When did she write this?
She actually wrote it at age 12, but she was age 7 when Jeff died at age 15. And so this has stuck with her, and she wrote this poem, like I said, about a year ago or something. It was published in a small area here and went out on a program. And this is how it carries along, you know, loss, how it reverberates. But I'll read this real quick to you. It says, "You were here, you were fine. From my mother's heart, from the look in my father's eyes. From Erica's warm visit to Taylor's sparkle in her eyes, went blind. From Erica's warm visit to a disastrous moment, you were here, you were fine. How can you do this? What should I do? With me in the other room to a sore, sharp pain in my jump, I can never describe that painful thump. You were here, you were fine. You were a part of us. I can't describe walking into the dining room, seeing Pastor sitting at one end of the table, Mom sitting at the other. I still can't describe how numb I was when I lowered my head into my mother's arms as the words, 'He took his own life,' went into the deepest of harms. I just want to say that you saved a lot of people's lives. I thank God every day for you being our lives. Even though you are not with us in person, you are still with us in spirit. Just answer one question for me. What should I do?"
Mm-hmm.
And I think that question, "What should I do?" it really just rings out. And like I said, she's, you know, this has stuck with her. But I think it sticks with everybody's lives, you know, when you've had a tremendous loss. And what should you do? You should take care of yourself. You should reflect back on the positive moments, on how the person lived, not how they died.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, take care of yourself. Make sure that you get healthy and help others, that you can help them to a position that you're in.
Yeah, that's great advice. Heidi, I was wondering, that poem was so moving. As a sibling, what came up for you with that?
Just how profound the loss is. These girls have lost their only brother. I lost my only brother. And our brothers will live on forever in our memories. We are who we are today because we knew them and they were part of our lives. And they had a huge impact on us, and they always will.
Yeah, and it's so, it says to me something, Eric, the fact that, is it Shelley that wrote it?
No, it was Tara that wrote it.
Oh, Tara?
My wife, Tara, yeah.
The fact that Tara could talk about her brother taking his life by suicide, 5 years later she writes this?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That to me is really key, because that says that you have not kept this a secret in your family. This has been an open thing that people have been able to talk about, which is so freeing for everyone.
Yeah, it is, and then, you know, you're it's, I think people's minds are starting to change a little bit and accept that type of death as a tragic loss as any other loss is. And my hope goes out to, and my prayers go out to anybody that's ever lost, son or daughter.
And I wanted to say there's wonderful that University of Michigan has a fabulous site for depression.
Yeah. Very comprehensive.
And I would really recommend that people go onto that site. What other things are you doing now, Eric?
I'm involved with, I'm outreach coordinator for University of Michigan Depression Center now. And so I moved from the National Advisory Board capacity to actually being on staff. And we put together programs. We're involved in a program right now with the National Football League Players Association and identifying depression in men and helping with that. But also go to a lot of schools, I think 48 schools last year and 30 different, some odd different community.
Wow, you spoke at 48 schools?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sick.
And then, so that continues on.
What if people wanted you to speak at their school? How would they get in touch with you?
Depressioncenter.org.
Okay.
And that'll put them into the University of Michigan Depression Center site, and I'm on their speakers bureau.
Oh, great. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you would go around the country and speak on that. That's
mm-hmm.
fabulous.
Yeah, it's spread out from just Michigan to a wider ranges, and which is neat to see. So it's the word's getting out.
Yeah. Now you were the kind of our grand marshal for the Compassionate Friends program,
uh-huh.
their conference in Michigan a year ago. And I wonder, did you do any Compassionate Friends, or do you know anybody who's gone to those groups?
You know what? No, I know people that have gone to the groups and relate back and forth. But as far as my time has been solely really kind of tied up as it is.
Well, I was thinking early on, you didn't ever attend anything right after Jeff died.
I'll be honest with you. I did not know about Compassionate Friends until, and this is I think, something that we need to get out more, word more out about Compassionate Friends. I did not know about Compassionate Friends until a later date.
Excuse me, Heidi, I've got a burglar alarm in my building. I think you might have to finish the show.
I thought that was the ending siren.
Okay, I'm going to hang up.
Okay,
Heidi,
well,
and you can finish the show.
I think it's time for our show to close.
Yeah, I think it's time for the...
Okay. So, Mother, you can leave. I will close the show. Don't hang up, Eric.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
So it's time for our show to close. I want to thank our guest, Eric Hipple. Please tune in again next week when our topic will be When Compassion Can't Wait, and our guest will be Valerie Sobel, founder of the Andre Sobel River of Life Foundation in memory of her son, Andre. Join us to hear about the foundation and the work of this remarkable woman, Valerie. This show is archived on our blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the Compassionate Friends website. This is Heidi Horsley. Please tune in again next Thursday at 9 Pacific Standard Time, 12 Eastern, for more of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal and support. Remember, others have been there and made it, and you can too. You need not walk alone. Thanks again for listening. I'm Dr. Heidi Horsley. And Eric, I just wanted to say that Jeff is gone, but not forgotten. He lives on in your memories and in all the work you do. Thank you for bringing awareness about depression and suicide to the world. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, Heidi. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us today on Healing the Grieving Heart. Join us again next Thursday at the same time on Voice America Health and Wellness.